Welcome to episode 534 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. I'm Peter Anderson. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. Today we begin a new 12-part series entitled The 12 Days of Christmas. It's the most wonderful time of the year, with the kids jingle-belling and everyone telling you, be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be much mistletoeing, and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. These words are included in a popular Christmas song first recorded and released in 1963 by pop singer Andy Williams. And the notion that Christmas is the most wonderful time of the year is one that is widely embraced. Often when we think of this season, words like joyful, happy, magical, and enchanting come to mind. But many of us enter this season, this year, feeling how things should be, but weighed down by the reality of how very far from all of that we are. For many of us, this is the first holiday we will experience without a loved one who has been taken from us in the past 12 months. We may be full of uncertainty about relationships, our health status, finances, politics, even our spiritual condition. This season can be hard for many of us. You may be tired, heartbroken, estranged from loved ones, yearning for more, settling for less, broke, afraid, betrayed, rejected, struggling, addicted, disillusioned, lonely, isolated, thwarted, doubting, numb. Any or all sorts of things that aren't showing up on the easily resolved Hallmark Christmas movies or in those super happy, blessed, and highly favored church people. Or maybe they're just better at hiding it. There is something about Christmas that makes the unbearable even more painful. That makes the sting of loneliness that much sharper, that makes your sense of despair particularly profound. But Christmas is for the heartbroken and for the desperate. See if you can visualize a cold Mediterranean night nearly 2,000 years ago. Joseph and a pregnant Mary are trudging through rough terrain on donkey and foot, making the 100-mile trip from Nazareth to Joseph's ancestral hometown of Bethlehem. I imagine that they probably left behind people who remained skeptical of the explanation of a recent out-of-wedlock pregnancy. Perhaps some of those skeptics journeyed some or all of the way with them to Bethlehem. Traveling this distance, so close to the time of Mary's delivery, was less than ideal. However, this was not a voluntary trip. It was for tax reasons that Mary and Joseph headed to Bethlehem, according to the story of Jesus' birth in the Gospel of Luke. Far away in Rome, the Emperor Caesar Augustus had demanded a census be taken of all his conquered lands so he might know what he would collect in taxes. In those days, taxes were paid in crops and animals. Mary and Joseph lived in an oppressive society. They were heavily taxed by local and faraway rulers who demanded as much as 50% to 60% of what the common people grew and owned. In many modern societies, taxes are used to fund services and may even be used to help those less fortunate. However, the taxes paid by people at the time of Jesus' birth were used to boost the wealth of rulers. Herod ruled Judea, Samaria, and Galilee as a police state. He was known as a client king, appointed by Rome to run a huge kingdom of Jews. A tense and often confrontational relationship existed between the farmers, fishermen, and townspeople of Galilee and Herod, Roman officials, and the urban aristocracy who held all the wealth and power. As in most agrarian societies, about 10% of the population was born into nobility and lived lavishly. The remaining 90% worked the fields around Nazareth, growing grapes, olives, and grain. In Bethlehem, where it is drier, sheep and goats were raised. The people were subsistence farmers, raising one bag of food for themselves and one for Herod or Caesar. Most peasants lived a precarious existence. Biblical scholar John Dominic Crossan said in an interview in Christian Century magazine, "I think it's safe to say that by our standards, injustice was built into this system. 10% of the top control virtually everything. While the rich prospered, the peasants suffered, and their hatred for Herod and the Romans grew." Jesus was born at a time when people were crying out to God, wondering if he had forgotten or forsaken them. Galatians 4 verses 4 to 5. "But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his son, born of woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons." Long before Jesus' birth, God was preparing the way. The two genealogies of Jesus recorded in the Gospels make us travel back in time, either to the beginning of the human race in Adam or to the beginning of Israel in Abraham and David. God was preparing the way centuries before Joseph and Mary finished their journey. The fullness of time was a moment at which promises given in the Old Testament, promises brimming with hope for future blessings and peace, finally came to fruition. Waiting for that fullness of time required centuries of patience. There was a lot of time between the first promises God made to Adam and Eve and O Holy Night in Bethlehem that was not full. Every moment in time up until that birth of Jesus was lacking. When the angels announced the birth of Christ with their tidings of peace, God declared that his promises were now being fulfilled. The Apostle Paul interprets this fullness of time as a time when God's people could at last claim their promised inheritance. Prior to this, they were like minor children, but now in Christ, as mature children, they had received the full rights to their promised inheritance. In a similar way, Jesus declared at the opening of his public ministry, "The time is fulfilled and the kingdom of heaven is at hand." When we think of Christmas, we might think of trees decorated with lights and ornaments. We might think of gingerbread and sugar cookies, Yule logs and fruitcake. We might think of stockings hung over the mantelpiece with care. We might think of tinsel and ribbon and colorful wrapping paper. We might think of frost spikes hanging off the window. We might think of caroling or familiar music from Sam Smith or Bing Crosby or the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. We forget that Mary and Joseph arrived at Bethlehem physically exhausted from the journey and emotionally worn out. We forget that Jesus was born in a foul-smelling cave and laid in a feeding trough. We forget that that first night was likely anything but silent. Christmas was about bringing hope to the poor, healing the brokenhearted, delivering the captives, restoring sight to the blind, and providing relief to those who are downtrodden, bruised, or crushed by tragedy. And that is still what Christmas is about today. For those who are hurting, for those who are heartbroken, for those who are desperate, for those who are lonely, Christmas has a message in it for you, both in its historical significance as well as what it points to now and for the future. Father, thank you for Jesus, who was born in the fullness of time. And thank you for a Christmas that was meant for the least, the last, and the lost. May the true meaning of Christmas give us comfort today. That's our episode. Remember that God calls you not only to live, but to thrive. Live life to the full today.